once you believe in yourself and you believe that the things that you say you want to do, you're going to do, the things that you can do are bigger. And so it might be that you start off by saying, all right, I am going to apply to be a guest on 10 podcasts. And to you, that might feel so daunting. And then you do your first one, and it's probably going to be sort of, you know, it might not be amazing.
A million downloads.
Yeah. Or it could be. Yeah. Who knows? A million downloads. Oh my goodness.
Welcome to Medium Lady Talks. I'm your host, Erin Vandeven. I'm a millennial and mother trying to build the place in the world that's made for me, while fighting burnout, living intentionally, and embracing gratitude, even when I'm grumpy. Here on Medium Lady Talks, we visit the topics and practical tips that will help you maximize self-discovery and minimize self-judgment so you can finally get momentum building the life you know is possible in this post-pandemic world. On this podcast, you can expect we'll get deep while having fun, and whether you're burnt out like a dog in a dumpster fire or celebrating your best life daily, you'll find the conversations, prompts, and tools I know will be helpful on your own personal healing journey. So stay tuned for my deep dive solo shows and interview episodes with dear friends and expert guests. Together, we'll make sure you have what you need to build the place in the world that's made for you. I'm so glad you're here. So let's jump in. Hello, hi, and welcome to Medium Lady Talks. I'm your host, Erin, and I'm joined today with a guest. I'm here with Megan from UBU Skills. Megan Hamilton is a speaking visibility and confidence coach for women and non-binary folks. She's a classically trained actor, a musician, and the speaker advisor at the TEDx Queens University. Megan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I love following you on Instagram.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Likewise, I love following you as well.
Yay.
Tell us, we are sort of semi-local to each other. I guess we're, you know, within, what would you call it, a two-hour drive from one another?
No, I think it's more like three. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But you know, just a little jaunt through Toronto and we could.
Yeah. I'm in your neck of the woods all the time.
We're basically neighbors.
Yeah. I should be doing this at your house.
Now that would be chaos. But tell the audience, tell the Medium Lady audience a little bit more about who you are and what you're all about.
Sure. So yeah, I'm a speaking visibility and confidence coach. I've been doing this now. I realized 10 years, I just hit 10 years. So I started by coaching law students at the Faculty of Law at Queens. I pitched the idea to them because the students were doing these competitions and they went for it. And I really enjoyed it, like really enjoyed it. And I thought, this is such a neat way because I'm a musician. And so a lot of my, you know, classically trained actor skills sort of transferred into being a musician and sort of performance and taking up the stage. And it felt nice to be able to use and teach people some of the training that I had had and to have them so responsive to it. So then it just kept developing and developing. And then people found out I was doing this and then they would hire me to, you know, coach their wedding speech or help them. You know, one of the profs kept losing her voice in October once, you know, after the summer. And so I taught her, you know, I have sort of a training regimen. And then I thought, I really love this. And where I was working at the time, I knew I wasn't going to want to stay there. And, you know, music has and always will be, you know, something that I do, but it doesn't pay the bills. So I thought, this is the thing. I think I'd been in business for myself at various points throughout my life. So I know the deal. And then I launched UBU Skills sort of softly in 2018. And then the goal was to leave in April 2020.
Oh.
So then I got this job teaching at the college here, St. Lawrence College. It was a course called Acting for Real Life. So in January 2020, I started teaching part-time at the college, working full-time at my job. I still had clients. And then I started this program called Make It Work Online to develop the structure of my business. And I was going to leave in April. And then, you know, the thing that we all know happened. And then I thought, well, it just feels so irresponsible to leave a pretty, you know, it was a unionized job. There was tons of benefits. But then some stuff happened. And I realized it was the universe saying, no, 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 you got to choose yourself now. Oh. So I took the risk and I left. So I've been doing this full time ever since. So 3.5 years. So yeah, I work with people developing the, you know, I have training to learn what to do, especially for folks who are nervous about speaking. But I also work with really established folks who just want to get better and become more visible and expand to a degree that they're not used to. So I feel like, you know, as we, because you took Jam Gamble's program, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how was that for you? You loved
it. I did. I loved it. I think that the Slay the Mic program in a lot of ways was about transforming from the inside out. Mm-hmm. I had desires to tangibly become a better speaker, but what I learned from the Slay the Mic program was actually about those desires being held up by my own beliefs and attitudes about my voice and what my voice could say and what my voice couldn't say. And that was a sort of 11-week transformation with JAM skills and experience in the context of a cohort kind of group learning situation. Yeah. Yeah. So that was that.
Because that's it, mm-hmm. isn't it? Most of it is just inside.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. For me, we use something called shadow work, which is where you get introspective about why your brain is telling you certain thoughts, mm-hmm. what your fears actually are, mm. because often we're actually quite wrong about what our fears are. And also, the shadow work helps us develop a more deep and compassionate relationship with ourselves, because when that happens, it's amazing how your courage ramps up. And we also work on building self-efficacy. So that's making promises to yourself that you keep over time. And then that means that once you believe in yourself and you believe that the things that you say you want to do, you're going to do, the things that you can do are bigger. Mm. And so it might be that you start off by saying, all right, I am going to apply to be a guest on 10 podcasts. And to you, that might feel so daunting. And then you do your first one, and it's probably going to be sort of, you know, it might not be amazing.
A million downloads.
Yeah. Or it could be. Yeah. Who knows? A million downloads. Oh my goodness. I used to have a podcast and I'd be like, 25 downloads. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. That is the pool we are swimming in.
But you do it. And it's not even, you know, half the time, it's not even about how it is. It's just that you did mm-hmm. it. And you think, oh my God, now I'm a person who has done a podcast. And everyone's in a different spot, right? So again, like depending on who I'm working with, some folks, the doing the podcast will be the hardest thing they've done up until this point. And then for other folks, it's, you know, they've been on every TV talk show in Canada and they're like, now they need to like move into the United States, or like now they need to start giving more of their own developed talks at conferences or being a keynote speaker as opposed to sort of a secondary speaker. But it's all the same no matter where you are, because it's really just tapping into what has been stopping you from doing this mm-hmm. and getting very honest with yourself about that, because that's really hard for a lot of us too, because we want it. We make up stories about why things are the way they are. We focus on other people instead of focusing on ourselves. And so that's where the shadow work comes in. And the shadow work can be very powerful. Mm. And it's just one of the tools, right? You sort of have to figure out for each person what they need. That's where the coaching comes in.
So with that in mind, what I've been focusing on for season 4 is to, with my guests, explore a central question. A central question usually related to the guest's expertise, but also related to these stories. I like how you said that. These stories that we make up and tell ourselves, and we sort of decide the end of the story before saying, well, let's see how this goes. Let's try it out. I'm not sure of the answer to this central question. I'm not sure of the end of the story, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to play it out. I'm going to turn the next page. So, Megan, you and I were going to talk about the central question, does everyone have something to say? And I'm going to tweak it since you've given us already a window into the people you serve and how you help people get results. Is, do I have something to say? So I'm going to suggest that there's three answers that the audience, I know what your answer is to that. I know what my answer is to that. We're here, we're on mic. Mm-hmm. We do think we have something to say. I think there's people who are listening who probably fall into three buckets. The first person says, no, I don't have anything to say. The second person says, maybe I had something to say if the conditions are right. And the conditions might be mm-hmm. perfectionism, people pleasing, playing to the expectations of others. And then the last person is, yeah, I definitely have something to say, but where do I take my voice? And what am I going to do with it now that I agree that I do have something to say? So I wonder if you want to kind of answer that question, speak to those three specific audience members with me. I think we could dive in first and think about the person who says, if I say, do you have something to say? And they say, no, I don't. I don't have anything to say. Let's appeal and speak to that person a little bit. What's going on with that friend?
Yeah, I would say, I think two things. First of all, I suspect that person has been shut down a fair amount. Do you know the book Women in Power?
No, but I love a book recommendation on this podcast.
Mary Beard, Women and Power. I love this book so much, and it really speaks to the conditioning, especially in Western culture, that has happened since we started developing this idea or like thinking about forum speaking or public speaking. So back in the day, women's voices, they didn't like women's voices so much that they took the time to carve on their palettes that women's voices were screechy, that women were not as intelligent as men, that women didn't have the same authority as men, therefore didn't have a space in the forum. Like stone tablets.
Somebody sweat with their chisel. Screechy.
It was important enough to set in stone. And so when you think about, and we know that, you know, this stuff continues, and you can think about all of the different ways that that idea has permeated culture mm-hmm. for literally at that point, thousands of years. That's what you're up against. It's not just men thinking that. It's the culture mm-hmm. that believes that women don't have the same authority as men, that women don't have the same mental capacity as men. Mm-hmm. And so certainly in the year 2024, most of us realize that that's not really true. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, you are dealing with your own internalized and society's internalized understanding of how we perceive women's voices. And it's mm-hmm. even to the point, you know, you hear if people are talking about people speaking, like I don't know what the percentages are, but like if there's going to be a disparaging remark about somebody's voice, 80% the disparaging remark is going to be about a woman's voice.
Yeah.
Too high pitched, too screechy, sounds naggy, sounds, you know, oh, my ears.
Like, vocal fry.
Oh God, don't even get me started on vocal fry. It makes me bananas because I have women coming to me saying, I need to work on my vocal fry. And I'm like, listen, we can't change society. Talk the way you talk and just get comfortable with people saying whatever they're going to say about your voice. Because what I don't like is when I get vocal fry and I often get, I need to lower my pitch. Mm-hmm. And I say, for who? I'll help you lower your pitch if that's actually what you need to be doing for your voice to be in a better place. But if that's going to cause harm for your voice, you're going to have to find someone else. And there are people who will do that, right? Like there's people who, and listen, I'm all about playing the game to a certain degree to get to a place where you need to go. Like we all have to sort of do that to a certain degree, but I'm way more interested in doing that in the most authentic way possible so that on the other side of it, you get to be yourself.
Right, right. I mean, it's called if you be you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because if you spend all this time masking and then you get to the place where you want to be, now you have to mask constantly or else you'll feel like you lose your footing. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're up against. And so folks who say, I don't have anything to say, for the most part, I really think that there's going to have been people being shut down.
Mm-hmm. Or you saw somebody be shut down.
Right.
You saw somebody try to use their voice and they were shut down and you thought, mm-hmm. okay, I've learned that rule. Mm-hmm. I've learned the penalty for that and I'm going like to internalize that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Definitely. Yep. Well, and that's, you know, and that's how this whole misinformation about women's voices has carried through the years because there were safety reasons, right? I often talk about, you know, the witch trials as well. Which, by the way, still happen in many parts of the world. Like if people think you're a witch, you're in big trouble. So, you know, back in the Salem witch trials, but there is witch trials in Scotland, like there is all over. Women were keeping their children safe mm-hmm. by teaching them to be quiet, to be amenable, because they knew if anybody thought you were a witch, that's it. You're dead. Mm-hmm. So that safety element comes into it as well, where using your voice is unsafe, potentially fatal. And now, sure, we know better, but we also know that like undoing cultural norms is incredibly difficult and you can only really work it for yourself, not for the other people. So if you think you have nothing to say, then I invite folks to think, do you have opinions about things? Because here's the other thing. A lot of times as well, we get swept up in our lives, right? You know, if I'm speaking directly to women or non-binary folks, perhaps you get married and have a family, and then you know there's a lot of responsibility that you take on, and you're tired, and so maybe you just sort of swim in the stream of life without being intentional about it. So with the shadow work, I often encourage folks to journal. And I know you like journaling mm-hmm. because journaling really helps you get intentional with yourself. And that helps you connect with yourself about what you want. I had a client a couple of years ago and we were saying, well, you know, what does your dream life look like? And she just stopped and said, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never let myself think about it.
Yeah.
And that's true for two reasons, right? One, you don't want to get disappointed. And two, you never thought that was possible for mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. to have some kind of dream life. And so I think the same is true in terms of developing opinions. If you think that nobody's going to care, or you think, you know, you're going to get shut down, or you think, then you may not actually have opinions.
So the person who says, no, I don't have anything to say, that might actually be because they don't have an opinion.
It could be.
Or let's actually, I'm going to say that in a slightly different frequency, which is they haven't considered their own opinion.
Yes. Yep. That's much better.
Right?
Yeah.
Is they haven't mm-hmm. considered their own opinion because they have been swept up by their lives and by responsibilities. And they're tired and they're trying to maintain buoyancy against the current or with the current. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Stop. Not drown. That's yeah, it.
Just not drown, right? And the truth of the matter is the ability to go from not drowning to navigating the waters of your busy life is going to be about building a structure that supports your identity, that supports your values, that supports what matters to you, that supports who you are, that you can stand on and see the current.
Yep.
And decide where you want to go. That's the difference is, you know, I say this all the time. It was something my therapist said to me when I was navigating my way out of postpartum depression. She said, you have to build the place in the world that's made for you, but then you have to stand in it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that if anything, Medium Lady Talks is about reminding people that you can build it and then you can inhabit it.
Yeah.
And when you build it and you inhabit it, it only belongs to you. And that's essentially an opinion, right? It's like you have an opinion, then you inhabit that opinion. Then it's yours, right?
Yep.
Then you do have something to say, right? Then you transition from this answer of, no, I don't have anything to say because I'm scared of the penalty. Or I actually, like, if I look in my heart, I find kind of like a kind of shrug emoji in the place of my opinion. And then some people say to me, like, I don't have a lot of time to figure out what matters mm-hmm. to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would say to those folks that that becomes about your attention and your focus and your, are you noticing? It's if you notice what matters to you. And I love how you said that about journaling, because journaling is really a wonderful way to connect with yourself about what you want. Those are your exact words. And I think that's like, if anybody wants to stop the episode here, that is a huge takeaway, is like, you don't know what you want. Just start writing some things down. Just start writing anything. And what you write will eventually navigate you to the things that matter.
Absolutely. I want to jump in here too, because this is something that's come up a lot in the last few years as more and more women are getting in touch with even how their brains work and what works for them. Mm. So for some folks, journaling actually is a real chore.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, that's true.
But voice notes mm-hmm. works amazingly well, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. I wanted to make sure I put that, because for some people that might be an absolute game changer. Oh my God. You mean I don't have to write things down? Because the, yep. you know, everyone's brain works so differently. But so even to take it further, mm-hmm. here's what I like to do. And I've been doing this for years.
This is great.
I use the moon cycles mm-hmm. to navigate what I'm focusing on when I'm journaling. So for the new moon, and this is, I mean, I didn't make this up. This is, you know, sort of pagan, began with pagan or animism, religion, spirituality. The new moon, you're supposed to welcome new things to your life. So that is when you might want to manifest or dream up your life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the full moon, you let go. So you think about, okay, what's not working for me anymore? The way that I handled this situation, I really don't like that about myself. Okay, how can I let that go? Or, man, this person that's been in my life for a long time really makes me feel bad about myself. Mm. I feel like I need to work towards severing ties with this person, or else creating some really strong boundaries. And that would be a thing to do on the full moon. And so I know now that at least every 2 weeks, I'm connecting with myself about what I want or what I want to get rid of. And that helps me stay intentional as well. And it's a game changer, because if anybody comes up to me and says, what do you want? Like, I know, because I've been thinking about it. And it's, you know, it's 15, sometimes 45 minutes every morning of journaling, depending on how much, you know, sometimes I'm just like, I do my commitment statement, pull some tarot cards, and that's it. And then sometimes it's like, this happened and this happened. Dear journal, I'm furiously writing. I don't actually write dear journal, but it, you know, it's been such a game changer for me, this journaling. And so, you know, a lot of the times, again, back working with clients, there's journal prompts, questions. Ask yourself this question. Just keep, write down whatever comes to mind and mm-hmm. start untangling, you know, the various threads here to get to the core of it.
I love that you suggested the voice notes for journaling, because I think that's the one thing that pulls me out of a journaling habit every mm. time, is my frustration with how slow my hand is.
Right.
And I'm yep. thinking faster than my hand is writing. And so the voice memo might really help with that. But also, so is just like a very unromantic Google Doc.
Oh, yeah.
You can journal on your laptop. You know, it's not very aesthetic for Instagram, but you can do it. Voice notes are the same. You know, I think we also feel like the act of journaling has to produce something aesthetically. Mm. Or maybe yeah. I'm just the only one who feels that way, but it's like,
no, I think journal you're
and
right.
pretty yep. pens and mm-hmm. et cetera. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And that really does work for some folks, but yeah. you're right. Like, you might be at a time in your life where going out and buying a journal is not part of the budget. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, whatever you've got, scraps of paper, just to get into the habit. But yeah, and a Google Doc is only unromantic if we say it is. Like, if you want to light some candles, bring out your special silky robe. Mm-hmm. I don't know, whatever like gets you into the moment, your computer can be just as exciting as a journal. I mean, I used to do like I have a course that teaches people how to use shadow work and with tarot. And I've got options for tarot for folks who can't get a deck right now or who aren't sure. And there's apps you can use. There's I give them some digital files. And it's like anything is romantic if you decide it is.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. So we've talked to the person who says, no, I don't have anything to say. Let's pivot and talk to the person who says, maybe I do. If the conditions are right, the person who's sort of putting bumper pads around how they use their voice and whether they have an opinion or not. What do we say to the person who says, maybe I do, if the conditions are right?
Yeah, first we need to validate the fact that there are people in unsafe situations where if they do use their voice, they might be met with some form of abuse. Super duper real for women and non-binary folks or folks who are in the community or all kinds of stuff. So that straight out of the gate, like Julie Lalonde, who's somebody I love so much, she is a bystander intervention expert and a gender-based violence expert and a very well known for her work in stalking and how to protect people from stalkers because she had a stalker. Julie Lalonde talks about how much we talk about visibility. And certainly it's like part of, you know, what I say I do, that like it's not actually safe for some people. Mm-hmm. So we just want to, you know, I like to give that caveat because sometimes people feel excluded from the conversation and you know, the conditions, usually you think about, okay, well, somebody doesn't want to say a controversial opinion on social media because they're afraid of getting canceled, right? That's a huge thing right now. Also, I used to be on team canceling doesn't happen. It's something that a certain group of people made up because they had terrible opinions and people were jumping on them, rightfully so. I have since absolutely switched gears because I have been involved with clients who have been canceled and it is bananas. Mm-hmm. I have seen this canceling happen in real time with people that I've been involved with. And it's beyond, I mean, like if I post something controversial, I mean, I say what I want to say most of the time anyway, right? I've certainly talked about feminism on Twitter and or X and had people had like the most annoying, weird folks saying awful things. I don't believe I've ever had a death threat or certainly any kind of threat, but I have had somebody like come at me very aggressively that made me feel like, okay, I need to block this person and then like go into privacy mode for a little while. So I get it. You know, have I lost work because of it? I don't think so. Or even if I did, you know, that's the whole point of why I'm as visible as I am, because I want to be myself and I want to work with people who have similar, where we just don't have to discuss like, is this a thing or not a thing? So the fear of getting canceled or of getting negatively impacted is real and it happens. Certainly, you know, I there's tons of folks right now who are getting in big trouble with their employers because of their opinion about what's happening in the Middle East, for example, right?
That's very
legit something that's happening. But if we're talking about Thanksgiving dinner and Uncle Joe tends to say inappropriate things and you feel like you don't want to wreck Thanksgiving dinner. And I usually say, Uncle Joe is wrecking Thanksgiving dinner. And everybody else doesn't say anything because that's just Uncle Joe. And if you have it within you to say, I'm really uncomfortable with this conversation, Uncle Joe, and I really would appreciate you not talking about this. Wow. That might change the course of family dinners going forward. And will there be repercussions? There might be.
But maybe I'll spin off of your Thanksgiving example, because I think that I can think of examples in my own life within my own family when I had an opinion and I kept it to myself and there were repercussions anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the repercussions happened anyway. and maybe I'm not close with that family member anymore or those things. And I didn't even say what I wanted to say. But the secondary repercussion of that is exactly that. I didn't say what I wanted to say, and I regret it. Mm-hmm. I regret it, you know? And so I think that there's this double-sided coin that we have to reconcile with people who say, maybe I could use my voice if the conditions were right. And sometimes those conditions might be, if I know I'm right, like facts, if I have facts, you know, if I have conviction, either I know factually, objectively, that what I'm saying is right, you know, like the earth is round, not flat, you know, for example.
Yeah, but those people who don't believe that really believe that they are factually correct.
Right, right. So that's another thing. Mm-hmm. The second condition is maybe if I feel like people in the room are on my side, not the other person's side. Right?
Yeah.
If I feel like I have the numbers. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is if I feel like I'm going to make somebody else happy by saying what I'm going to say. You know, like if I'm going to, in some ways, like perform to the expectations of somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I think that that actually all goes back to what you were saying about the thousands and thousands of years that women have been told you don't speak. I think women now are told you do speak if these things are true, right? Like you do speak if, and I think for this is to varying degrees, you do speak if you're standing up for somebody else, but not yourself. Right? Mm-hmm. You do speak if you're celebrating somebody else, but not yourself.
Yeah.
You do speak if you're taking care of your kids, but not yourself. And you do speak if it's for your boss, but not yourself. Like, do you see what I mean? Like, these are the conditions with which you can sort of share your opinion. And I do think that that fear of being canceled, I think, unfortunately, we've turned that canceled part into this sort of morality penalty on the person who worries about being canceled. Mm-hmm. When what we're really talking about is there are degrees, big and small, that somebody might experience negative outcomes from using their voice.
Yep.
And we say, oh, you're worried about being canceled. What we're saying is you're worried about losing money.
Interesting. Right.
Right. And it's this morality. It's like, well, you won't use your voice if you're worried about losing money. But I think if we talk about all of the degrees, and you made that example about employer pressure and or, you know, relationship pressure or membership of a community pressure, there's also other penalties that really come with a lot of cost. Mm-hmm. The cost might be spiritual. It might be emotional. It might be mental. It might be physical to your safety point. So I think that, you know, we talk about being canceled and it's sort of this like, you know, you're afraid of being canceled is, to me, when I hear people say that, it means like losing followers, losing money, losing influence. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so worried about those things. But I think people are worried about a host of other things that we don't talk about when we talk about being canceled.
Well, and, you know, frankly, I think that we really have to look at what being canceled means. And there are degrees of it. So like,
and the timeline varies too, right? We see that happen to people.
So some of the canceling that I've been witness to in the last little while is beyond anything that just a regular person would experience by posting something. And certainly, you know, there, if you are worried about losing your job and you have kids, like there's lots of things to consider. Mm-hmm. But canceling can mean physical safety is at risk. Financially, you can be ruined. Mm-hmm. Your family could get involved because people go after your family members. Mm-hmm. Like it is when we talk about canceling, it is far bigger than most of us will ever experience. Now, you know, you talked about, and this ties in together, you talked about sort of regretting not saying something because the thing happened anyway and you didn't get a chance to say. For me, when I'm trying to make a decision that I know will have a big impact, I think to myself, how am I going to feel about myself at the end of the day? Because my moral compass is really strong, and I don't say that for brownie points. I know how terrible I feel, and frankly, I haven't done it in a long time because I can't live with myself, right? My values are my North Star, and I find it very difficult. Now, I might stay on the underside of something and weigh sort of options. Like, I may not do things in a big performative way. And I don't mean performative in a negative way. That word has become, right?
I'm so glad you're saying that. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I don't always need to say everything that's on my mind. Or one of the things I learned actually from working with Trudy LeBron or working in her groups is that like it is okay and actually probably better if you take time to really think about how you feel about something instead of having that quick, immediate reaction. Because people, we have got to this place in our culture where people are like, well, what does this person think about it? Oh, they haven't even posted anything about it. Well, let's get mad at them. I think we really need to give people a little bit of a longer leash in terms of like, there are so many different reasons why somebody might or might not say something or might not use their voice in certain situations.
When we think about speaking out or using our voice or sharing our opinions in a variety of ways, you're right. We make it really binary. We make it like speaking out is good, not speaking out is bad. And certainly by asking this question today, Megan and I want to introduce, I think, a lot more nuance to that question. Do I have something to say? It's not that when you say, no, I don't have anything to say, that you're falling on the bad side of the answer. Mm-hmm. And when you say, yes, I do have something to say, that mm-hmm. you're falling on the good side of the answer. It's that having something to say and then saying it
can have consequences.
Can have consequences. And also is also about so much more than sometimes that one thing you have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I can think about, and I'll share a personal example, and I'm steering slightly away from heavier topics. Mm-hmm. For a long time, you know, and I've shared this probably every episode I say, I wanted a podcast for so long. Like so long. And I kept thinking, well, maybe I could have one if all these conditions, if my boss never listened to it, mm-hmm. if my kids weren't embarrassed by it, if my husband promised to never download it, if my parents were okay with it. You know, it was all these sort of ways that I felt like if I could make a perfect podcast, then I could have one. And in a lot of ways that like delayed what inevitably became Medium Lady Talks. And I've had some people say to me like, oh, you know what? I think it happened exactly the way it was supposed to. And I don't know, like to my mind, I really think that the podcast came out of a place that was more desperate and more suffering than I would have ideally liked for it to happen. And so I think that's also the position that I want to bring in some of those audience members who maybe have something that feels like part of a dream, that using your voice in some way is part of a dream. Maybe it's about being on stage. Maybe it's about expressing yourself creatively. Maybe it's about trying a new business. Maybe it's about stepping into visibility online. And you say, maybe I can if things are perfect. And I think what Megan and I are sort of saying, whether it's a super intense way to use your voice, or maybe it perhaps is a less intense way of using your voice, especially compared to something like speaking out against something that might make you unsafe, or using your voice in a way that might compromise yourself emotionally, physically, spiritually, etc., financially. There are these other ways that we could be using our voice, but we're also kind of coaching ourselves to stay small and to stay quiet and silent. Mm-hmm. I think even I used to do these rants on Instagram. I would find a video that got me really thinking about feminism and motherhood and being a millennial woman. And I would remix them or splice them. I don't know what the phrase is. And I would say, so I would show a little bit of that and then I would jump in. And it was sort of trendy. It was like other people were doing this kind of rant thing. Mm-hmm. And I did one and the creator took massive offense to the fact that I used their video to critique a trend. And then called in all of their, and this creator had a much bigger following. Like my following is like, you know, whatever, I'm doing my thing. It's fine. It's perfect size for me. This creator had a much bigger following. And I thought, why are you so mad about this like dinky creator calling out this thing? And she was like, you should take it down. And I said, listen, I'm really sorry that it impacted you, but I stand by what I've critiqued about the trend. I know you're a great person. I think you're very funny. I follow you online. Like, this is not meant to be like a personal attack. And I'm very confident that I didn't say anything that personally attacked you. Well, then she called in all of her other influencer friends in my DMs, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to do that again. And I've stopped doing those kinds of videos. Because, and sometimes I tell myself, it's like, well, I made one and I hurt one person and I don't want to hurt anybody with my content. But sometimes I think, was it really about that? Was it really about that? Or did I just decide that it was too uncomfy? It was too visible. And maybe it's better not.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really interesting that you say that, because as you were switching gears, which I'm glad you did, because I will always go to the safety piece first. I think that this idea of I do have something to say, but only if the conditions are right, I think it really leans into boundaries. And as you were saying before, self-advocacy. And so boundaries are uncomfortable. If you need to make a boundary with somebody, it's because there's conflict.
Oh, okay.
And something is not working for you. Like, there may not be outward conflict, but on the inside, something is happening.
I love that you said that. I've never thought of it that way. No, because but you're 100% right, is that boundaries are uncomfortable because they're the source of the need for a boundary is some kind of conflict. And I always rely on the Brené Brown definition of a boundary, which is like, here's what's okay, here's what's not okay. But in order to have that, you have to have a not okay part. And the not okay is the conflict. So go on, keep going. That's great.
Yeah. And so let's say, you know, this is usually the example I use. Your mother-in-law comes over all the time. And by the way, mine did not. So this is not a personal, people know me. I'm like, do not never come over unless you call first. And even then,
maybe don't.
We'll see. Just, yeah, don't stop by my house. I'm not that person. Some people are and they love it. I won't answer the door. So your mother-in-law comes over all the time. Or even better, actually, you are a mother-in-law or a ma, a grandma, and the grandkids are getting dropped off at your house all the time without just sort of like showing up and being like, hey, I just have to run some errands. Can you watch the kids? Totally interrupting your day. You're retired, whatever. And of course you want to see your grandkids, but like you also get to have a life and you're not just there all the time just waiting to be, you know, babysitting your grandkids. Maybe you want to have more meaningful time with them and like go out with them or whatever the case. And so you have to say to this person, you're going to have to call and we're going to have to agree on times because I'm not just going to be here constantly. And that person, they might really need you. And you know what I mean? And like it might be really uncomfortable, but you also get to say, as you say, this is what's okay. This is what's not okay. And the other person might get really upset with you. The other person might even not bring the kids around very much for a little while, which might be really upsetting because we can only ever control how we handle situations. We cannot control how other people handle situations. And that is what can be uncomfortable. And usually if you're creating a boundary with somebody, you are changing their perception of your relationship. And they might be frustrated by that because they might be thinking to themselves, and maybe rightfully so, they've been sort of crappy. And you're sort of saying, hey, like, I'm not here for this. That might make them feel upset with themselves, which then they turn out to you. Like, there's all kinds of ways that this kind of behavior plays out. But being able to self-advocate is one of the most important skills that women and non-binary folks can have because we have been conditioned to be amenable, to not stir up the pot. And when women speak up, it's often met with even harsher reactions. And so at the end of the day, you are building your life by creating boundaries. You're building that dream life that you want to step into, you know, the thing you spoke to earlier. And so if you have something to say, only if the conditions are right, if we're not talking about safety, I would say for the most part, you're doing yourself a disservice by not speaking up.
You're leaving something on the table. of a life fully lived.
Mm-hmm. And the more you get used to being uncomfortable with people being upset with you, or the more you get used to being okay with other people being upset with you, the easier it is, right? I remember when I fully understood what boundaries meant, which is you really get to not care, right? Like if somebody is constantly doing something they shouldn't be doing and you have to point it out to them and they're upset about it, you also get to not care about them being upset. And I don't mean that in like you might have feelings, I don't know, but that can be like not your responsibility.
Eventually.
Yeah, you might need time to, yep.
Mm-hmm. I think if you practice, and I would say I have a smaller boundary muscle than you do. So let's say, for example, that someone is disrespectful to you at work and you decide to assert your boundary and say, here's what's okay, here's what's not okay. And then the other person responds and they're upset because you've mm-hmm. pointed out behavior that they have previously not had to think about or not been held accountable to. And that might come with their response about some boundaries that they maybe want to set with you as well. Or maybe some things that they're like, well, since we're sharing notes, here we go. Here's some feedback, right? And so in that context, then you do experience discomfort. And I think that then all you can do is remind yourself about the here's what's okay, here's what's not okay in the first place, right? And that is your boundary to hold. It's not their boundary to obey, is the other thing I think that people say, like, what if you set a boundary and people don't listen? I've said to folks is like, well, you have to remember that your boundaries are yours, right? And that is going to test your muscle. And you're going to feel like pulling the trapdoor on that boundary and saying like, well, I said it and nobody followed it. You're the one following your boundary by using your voice to remind people of what's okay and what's not okay. And that's where it gets perpetually saying, you know, I don't care about your reaction, or I can disconnect myself from needing to soothe you after I set a boundary.
Yes.
Definitely. But sometimes there is a little bit, it's a little bit more, setting a boundary is a little more spirally. Like when I hear boundary, I imagine a black line on a white piece of paper. Mm-hmm. But really, setting a boundary is a little bit more of a toilet spiral sometimes.
Totally. And sometimes, you know, this came up last year, I think, with what's his name?
Oh, Jonah Hill.
And the things that he was saying were boundaries,
right?
Are not boundaries. Like boundaries are, like you can have requests. You can say, I would appreciate it if. But boundaries must be rooted in you being treated with respect. That's what boundaries are rooted in. And if you're not being treated with respect, that's fine. You can like try rules with other people, but like telling somebody else not to wear a bikini is not your boundary to make. Your boundary is that means I'm not going to be with you anymore. And that's fine. I mean, sort of not, but like who wants to be with that person anyway who's trying to tell you what to wear? Like boundaries are you have to get clear about what a boundary is and what a boundary isn't. I actually have a blog article about this. What is a boundary? What is not a boundary? That's not what it's called. I can't remember what it is. But and it talks about how sometimes people try to be manipulative with other people so that they can feel safer. And that's not a boundary. Maintaining boundaries is the hardest part. It's not even just saying to somebody, this is my boundary. It's then them breaking them and you saying, I have told you this. You've got like one more chance and then I'm going to need to take some space from you. Right? Mm-hmm. Sucks mm-hmm. to do mm-hmm. that. It's so much effort. There's so much mm-hmm. stress involved. I mean, not always. Like it depends on where you're at with your boundary journey, I guess. But it's a lot of effort to keep those boundaries strong. And the thing is, once you've set them, and if you let somebody just continue to break them, that's really hard on yourself. You really take away from your self-worth.
Yeah, I've said on a couple of other episodes that boundaries are one of the higher forms of self-care, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, hard. Really hard. Really hard. So maybe we need to have you come back on the show and we can dive deeper into the boundary conversation, because I feel like we've just scratched the surface. So for the person who says, maybe I do have something to say if the conditions are right, we've touched on safety, which is a very real thing. But we've also, you know, considered as well that think about the boundaries maybe that might benefit you when you use your voice. And think maybe about boundaries as a condition that you can set to use your voice, rather than maybe saying, I can use my voice if it's perfect, if it's a perfect situation and everybody feels good about them. You might say, maybe I have something to say in the context of self-advocacy and boundary settings. And maybe instead of using my voice in the way that is only super comfortable, think about trying to use your voice in a way that might be a tiny bit uncomfortable, because that's a way to sort of, again, start to draw a bigger circle around the conditions when you can use your voice. Because I think when we put conditions on things, it's usually a really tight circle. Mm. Here's where I use my voice in this tiny circle, and here's all the other spots I don't use my voice or have something to say. And then it's, can I make that circle a little bit bigger and experience a bit of growth and discomfort?
Yeah.
And then next time, when I feel like I have something to say, can I draw a bigger circle around that?
Yeah. So that's a really similar analogy to what I use for visibility, which is, sorry, I have all these chickadees Aww. That are coming to my window. I love it. I have a little bird feeder out there. Is a visibility ladder. So you take that step onto the first rung. And also I like the idea of like the upward trajectory, because at the top is like, and then there's always another ladder after you get to the top, but the top is like a goal reached, or like a, you know, if your life is a video game, it's yep. like the next level yep. or you got
level
like,
up for sure.
You know, yeah. And you do have to really treat, you know, if you are trying to expand your visibility and like, you know, your nervous system really struggles with that, you really do have to be careful, because you don't want to like try something four rungs up that you're not ready for, only to then be shut down, as you likely will, and not be really, really solidly ready to handle it. And then just think, well, why did I even try? Yeah, no, I can't speak up for myself. And then you go to level one, which is I have nothing to say.
Oh, I like that. Right? Okay.
Yeah, you got to be intentional about it.
So let's maybe make our way a few rungs up that ladder, I guess, and talk to the person who says, yes, I do have something to say, and I'm actually not really sure where to start.
Mm.
Or I actually want to put all of my fingers in all kinds of pots, and I just want to get my voice everywhere. And I'm kind of super burnt out of using my voice.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, social media is such a great place to start in terms of getting comfortable seeing your opinion and having people have dissenting views. Because we often surround ourselves with people who are like-minded, or there's, you know, if we have friends that we know, like certain conversations we don't have just because we know we don't agree. And that's fine too, right? Like the other thing is that people don't always agree. And it is okay to say, we are never going to see eye to eye on this. That doesn't change my opinion of you. Let's just decide not to talk about it. I think that's absolutely appropriate in certain situations. Now, again, certain mm-hmm, situations, mm-hmm. right? That's like, should I paint my house mm-hmm, red?
No.
No, I don't think you should. Okay, let's just not ever talk about that again.
Don't mention my red house anymore. Yeah.
That's not like, is my humanity valid? Very different.
Exactly. He's my humanity. Yeah, I think that that's definitely really important. I think some people like to pull the, that's your opinion.
Yeah.
This is my opinion.
Right.
Which is yeah. probably true like 95% of the time. But if you're using that on the 5% of the times when we're questioning someone's right to dignity, safety, recognized human experience, then that's not opinion. But go on, go on. So you were saying social media is a great place to start. Mm-hmm. Why do you think so?
Well, I think social media is a great place because it is often not always folks that we know. And it allows us to be uncomfortable in a relatively safe environment. Like, you will feel the sting of somebody having a different opinion. I mean, more often than not, you post your opinion and like nothing happens. Because you think, then you press send and you're like, ooh, and then maybe you'll get a few likes, or you might get people going, absolutely. But more often than not, you're not like, excuse me,
I know.
Or I like, know. We can never be friends again. And so that's a really good lesson in, okay. And that's what I spoke to before about getting canceled is not a couple of people disagreeing with you on the internet.
Yeah.
Right? And it's good to know that. And it's good to develop your ability to work through what it feels like when somebody doesn't agree with you. And you can start small. You know, if you have an opinion about a newspaper article, or if you have an opinion about, let's say, your area of expertise, whatever you have a job in, and, you know, you see the way it's usually done and you disagree with that, you know, you might go on LinkedIn and say, you know what? This is the way things are normally done. And here's how I think it should be done. Mm-hmm. Here's what I would like to see happening. And you might have people say, that's ridiculous. Mm. And that might feel really upsetting for the first time if you've, and you also might find, wow, I have more supporters on this than I thought. That might allow you to develop relationships with those people and even develop your opinion further because you're having the chance to talk it out. Same with people who have a different opinion than you. They might offer a side that you hadn't considered yet, which, you know, you might agree with them or you might not, and then you can develop your opinion about that. So starting small with something like social media, but also, you know, there's lots of different ways that you can start to build your visibility ladder if you do have something to say. So maybe you decide, you know, at the work meetings, okay, I'm going to commit to putting my hand up once a work meeting and either asking a question or giving an opinion. Mm-hmm. You make that commitment. And even if you feel like you don't have something to say, think of something to say so that you get used to the idea of contributing mm-hmm. and being visible and being seen. And so that's like if you're just starting out, right? If you're like, if you feel ready to sort of take this on and deal with the discomfort and all of that. But if you're at a place where you're already, where you're like, you know, you have a TED talk or a TEDx talk in you, or you have an opinion you'd really like to share, maybe you start a blog because, you know, blogs are visibility. Maybe you start one of the other platforms where you can write your opinion down. Maybe you pitch an article to an online magazine or a local newspaper or somebody else's blog. You ask them if you can guest blog for them. Maybe you make a video about your opinion or a reel. Maybe you pitch yourself for a conference talk. Right? Mm-hmm. There's like all these different things you can do. And again, I think that depending, you know, it depends on who you are, depends on your comfort level, depends on what you've done. Do whatever that makes the most sense. Some people are really good at putting themselves in uncomfortable situations and, you know, learning really quickly and like and getting to a next level quite fast. And other people really need a slow forward momentum trajectory for all kinds of reasons.
I have a question about visibility. Sometimes feels like something we can claim. I'm saying that as a white, upper middle class, cisgendered woman. Mm-hmm. I know that for racialized folks and for non-binary folks, they might try to claim visibility and be denied or be silenced their own visibility. Should we speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, I can speak to that as a white cisgender woman, right? And I certainly had clients who say, you know, the visibility ladder, the traditional way you're talking about it, doesn't work for me because there's a lot of other stuff that I'm going through that, you know, doesn't feel like it's factored in here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like absolutely. And so when you decide to be visible, are you dealing with more potentially negative outcomes because of your race or your identity? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still important to be visible. And again, you know, it goes back to a lot of the other stuff we were talking about. Like what is the potential outcome for you? You know, you get to make a choice of how visible you are or how much you're going to try to speak up, what you want to be going for. Are you going to be met potentially with more trouble or discomfort than somebody who has less identity struggle or stereotypes or perceptions? 100%.
Mm-hmm. There's an example that I'll bring into this. My family, my kids and I and my husband, we love Survivor. And so we've been watching the latest season, and there was a challenge whereby a Black woman expressed frustration that the team was not coming together for the challenge. And I think she just yelled and expressed herself. And afterwards, in the interview one-on-one with the producers, she said, "I'm so mad at myself that I showed up in a way where people could potentially label me an angry Black woman." That was the thing she was most upset about. Mm. Most upset about, that she hadn't been able to show people the person she authentically feels like before they might attribute negative stereotypes and biases to her visibility, to her expression, her self-expression. I'm really grateful that she vulnerably shared that with the producers on the show, because it created a really good moment for me to say to my kids, isn't that interesting that the thing she was most scared about was being labeled with a negative stereotype?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain that experience. That's not the experience I have. It's not the experience you have. So I certainly don't want us to start to drift into a space where we can speak for folks of racialized backgrounds or folks who are non-binary. But what it makes me think of is, as I think more about my own visibility, and as I think more about saying yes to using my own voice more and more and more and more,
mm-hmm.
I also think about, how am I helping other people to use their voices? And how am I creating safe, welcoming, responsive spaces for folks of racialized backgrounds and non-binary folks to gain that the benefits that I've experienced, as a white woman? I think that that's probably like the most tangible thing I can say, is to acknowledge that my ability to share my opinion when I want to is always going to be met differently than somebody who has the same desires as I do, but has a different color of skin or isn't gendered the way that I'm gendered. That's always going to be a different experience. And I just have to acknowledge that that is true, and to keep my eyes and ears open for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's so important. You know, I make a point of always being aware of that and doing my best to bring folks up, making sure that I'm not just centralizing myself and my identity, that I'm encompassing and making space for all kinds of different identities. I sometimes run a masterclass for women and non-binary folks called Big Voices. And then I say, you know, because people say, well, what are you supposed to do when men don't take us seriously? And I say, yeah, you're not going to be able to undo centuries of patriarchy in that moment. So what do? You like step up, use your voice, and be the strong person that you know you are to the best of your ability in that situation. You might feel those vibes from those folks, and they might not even know that they're putting them out there. And you're not going to undo that. But you still get a spot at the table, whether they think you deserve to be there or not. And so it's that thing of like, yes, how you're feeling that it's harder for you is 100% true. And you have a choice. Like, do you want to work against that? Do you want to still keep showing up, knowing that it's going to be harder, knowing that you need to, get your supports, have your supportive folks around you, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And again, for those of us who do have sort of an easier time, let's say, bringing up folks, sharing access, talking about it, creating spaces. So if you are somebody who is a community builder, like being very explicit, like this is an anti-racist space, this is a and says, it's not enough to just say it. It's, you also have to say, here is the system by which we address harm. So that people know that it's not just lip service. If you're coming into this space and let's say you're a Black woman and you experience racism, here's what you do. Here's how this gets addressed. Because it's lip service unless there's an actual like method of reparation baked into the community system. And I think that just being very explicit about all of that your friend of mine, Carrie Ann Clota, often talks about going to websites. And if she can't tell easily if this is a safe space for folks within the LGBTQ plus community, then she lets them know and says, you know, is this a queer friendly place? And they'll say, of course. And she'll say, well, I can't find that easily. And so if I'm working with, you know, folks who are within that community, that's the first thing I look for. So you might want to add that. And then some people, you know, don't want to do it. And then you're like, well, then you're really just
not who you say you are. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a really interesting, it's a very self-aware space you come into when you say, yes, I have something to say. Because the central question of the episode continues to be, do I have something to say? And I think, you know, Megan and I are of the opinion that, yes, you do. There's a few things that we feel strongly about is, yes, you do. The first question is, what is it? The second question is, who gets to hear it and who doesn't? That's your decision. Mm-hmm. And the third question is, where are you going to say it? For the folks who say no, we're sort of encouraging you to think about, if the answer was yes, what would you say? For the folks that say maybe, we also want to say, you know, if the answer was yes, who would you say it to? And then the third question is for the folks who say, yes, I do have something to say, then it's where are you going to share what you have to say? And also recognizing that that's going to then be a perpetual experience and commitment that ebbs and flows. Is just because you say, yes, I have something to say, doesn't necessarily mean that you say it and then you're like, well, I said what I had to say.
Yeah, that's it. I said it the one time. Hey, everybody, here it is, the one time I said it.
Here it is. Here's my single and only TED Talk, you know. Because to your point, the visibility of your opinion takes steps, it takes iterations, it takes ladders. Sometimes you get to the top of one ladder, you move over to realize that after achieving that goal, you want to set some others. You know, if I use my podcast as like the most basic, most simplest way that I said, yes, I have something to say. I started the podcast. There were numbers of rungs on the ladder before I hit that goal of starting the podcast. But then once I started the podcast, I realized that, oh, there's a lot of other ways that I want to continue the commitment to say what I have to say, to have something to say and to say it, and to say it in community and to say it in conversation and to say it for others who can't say it or don't say it or never even thought about it. And I think that that's one small thing that, like, I think everyone should have a podcast. If we were to wrap up on our question, Megan, what's some like final advice you have for folks? You know, we've talked about boundary setting. We've talked about visibility. We've talked about increasing your comfort zone. We've talked about journaling. What's some final takeaways you want to send the audience who are answering the question, do I have something to say?
Yeah, I think that the overarching important theme is it's often going to feel uncomfortable to talk about your opinions when you're first starting out. Mm-hmm. And that discomfort is not, that fear necessarily is not like your intuition telling you not to do it. Instead, it's likely that you're going to have to get used to what it feels like to be uncomfortable. Because here's the other thing, and this is the other side, and this sucks, and I'm sorry, but this is the truth. Sometimes it actually doesn't get easier. I mean, I had to set boundaries last year, and it was a struggle. And like, I wouldn't call myself outspoken, but I'm, you know, I'm who I am. And I found it was stressful. Mm-hmm. I felt it in my body. Physically, it was stressful. I had, you know, a lot of anxiety around it. And I still did it because I knew I was going to have to. I knew I needed to. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like it was like, oh yeah, I'm good at this now. Like I never have to worry about feeling stressed if I have to set boundaries with people or if I say my opinion. What you do is you build up a toolbox full of tools for yourself that you commit to using so that you continue to move forward in your life based on your values, based on lifting people up, based on what's quote unquote right. Like what's right, what's just, what's important. I know that my work empowers people to use their voices, and especially folks that we haven't heard from very much. And considering the state of the world right now, we need fresh takes. We need non-traditional opinions. We need voices that, you know, maybe have not been represented to have the power to speak up. So I know that like the work that I do, when I think of it, I get passionate about it because I know that it has the power to change the world. I understand what that sounds like when I say it, but that's how important it is to me. I think of my kid watching me stand up for myself, doing hard things, even if it's, you know, it's the right thing, even though it's a hard thing, then she knows that that's how we do things. At some point, it turns around and you realize you're an example for other people and that people might look to you. And so, you know, I know I veered off track a little bit here, but like ultimately, I think that A, you always get to decide. And it's it really is not everybody is built the same way. And that's totally fair. And also, I think we're at a critical moment in this world where our opinions, speaking up, advocating for others, advocating for ourselves is critical. And so getting okay with feeling uncomfortable, I think, is really important right now.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Erin.
It was so awesome to have you on the show, everyone. Megan Hamilton, UBU Skills. Megan, tell our audience where they can connect further with you, where they can find you, how they can access your programs.
Yeah. I'm on Instagram a lot. That's my social media platform of choice. So that's at letters UBU Skills. My website is ubuskills.com, and you can find out about how to work with me in the Work With Me page. I also give, you know, my backstory there. And there's a tools section, which has lots of free resources for folks who are starting to think about. So I have a shadow work workbook. I have a free speaking guide that covers my speaking training. There's for folks who are speakers. There's like how to leverage your talks to create more opportunities for yourself. What else is there? There's like a breathing GIF, animated GIF. There's a few things in there. But my DMs are always open. I love connecting with people. I'm not going to be the gal that's like trying to get you to work with me right off the bat. I like conversations. I like getting to know people. I like building relationships. That's how I approach social media, not any other way. Yeah. Where else can you find me? Those are probably the two easiest places to start.
That's awesome. And we'll link all of that in the show notes. Megan, thanks for coming on the show. It was really awesome to talk to you today.
I love talking to you. Thanks, Erin.
I hope you'll come back someday.
100% I will.
That's awesome. All right, everyone. This has been Medium Lady Talks. I am your host, Erin. I want to thank you for the time and attention that you've given to this podcast today. We made it to the end. It would mean the world to me if you would share this episode with someone that you think could benefit from it, or hop into my DMs and let me know what you liked or any feedback that you have about the show. I know time is one of your most precious resources, and it's never lost on me that you choose to spend some of it with us here today. In the meantime, I hope you have an amazing day, and I want you to know you're doing such a good job. Megan, you're doing such a good job.
Thank you so much. You're doing such a good job.
All right, everyone. I love you, and we'll talk to you in the next one. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to Medium Lady Talks, created and produced by me, Erin Vandeven. If you want more of the general vibe, gratitude, and encouragement from this episode, please come and find me on Instagram at medium.lady. And since you've made it to the end, I'd love to get to know you even better. Screenshot this episode so you can share it on Instagram, and be sure to tag me so that we can chat. Thanks for listening. Remember, you're doing such a good job. Your place in this world can only be filled by you. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.
Also, did you love how I just went to the
Yeah, and do you love that I steered you back?
I do, actually.
I hope you don't mind.
No, I appreciate it.
Okay.